Copcast, episode 141, Sunday, September 20th, 2009.
The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
110
pursuit.
110's in pursuit, 2357, 1020, 110.
Welcome to Copcast, a weekly podcast where we discuss cop and tech issues. I'm Rich Shoemaker, and I'm coming to you from the Digital Command Center, nestled in the beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains of Salem, Virginia. And I want to thank you for taking your time to download and listen to this week's show. But before we get started, I wanted to remind you, I'd like to extend an invitation to all of our legion of listeners. If you have a decent microphone, all you need to do is install AOL Instant Messenger, and I'll give you an opportunity to join me as a co-host for a week, just like Michael does from time to time. If you want to give it a try, just drop me a line at talkback@copcast.net, and I'll get back in touch with you. Well, again, this week, my Copcast correspondents and I have worked really hard to put together another great show, but let's take a minute to look in the mailbag before we head off to the roll call room for briefing. Briefing, what the hell is that? Anyway, Clinton Wright wrote to tell us, "Hey, letting you know I've been listening for years from New Zealand. Used to be a security guard, but that fairly permanently did my head in. Best guess, I walked into something or someone hit my forehead with something late on night on a motorway building site 3 years ago. Not knowing is really a bitch. Loving life as a stay-at-home dad of my little two-year-old girl now. I use you guys and a police scanner to keep an eye on and appreciate the fact life is not always as lovely as playing with my daughter and visiting cafes with friends." Well, thanks, Clinton, for completing your homework assignment. Now, what happened to the rest of y'all? Remember, if you listen to Copcast from outside the United States, I wanted you to drop me a line and just let me know where you listen and how long you've been listening. But remember, we like to hear from all of our listeners. So if you have a comment, a suggestion, or a good cop story, send us an email at talkback@copcast.net. Well, again, this week, we're pleased to have our very own two girls from Utah back to give us their perspective on last week's show. Now, you remember last week, the two girls couldn't make it because Shell had a death of a very dear friend. And so we're very happy to have the two girls back. So sit back, listen, and learn what they have on their mind. And he don't know. I dug my key into the side of his pretty little souped-up four-wheel drive. Carved my name into his leather seat. I took a Louisville slugger to both headlights. Well, I guess the fans of the two girls from Utah are beside themselves right now because we did get in touch with our two girls this week. We had a little hiatus last week. And Shell, we want to extend a big Copcast condolences to you from across all around the world from all our listeners. I know you lost a very close friend last week and we feel really bad for you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
And that's it. In case you didn't catch it or you didn't read the blog from last week, that's why we didn't have Shell and Sue's on last week, was because of that loss of Shell's. And so this week we're going to make up for it, aren't we?
Oh, yeah.
If you're ready.
Be back. Well, we're always ready.
We're back.
You know, you girls listen to every show and you pick out your favorites from every one. Mm-hmm. And, Suze, I got to tell you, the one that you picked out this week, to me, was a bunch of bull.
That's my neighbors, man. They're my neighbors. That is the city next door. Whoop, whoop. Way to go, guys.
If you listened to the show last week, there were some cops from, what's the name of the town again? Suze?
South Jordan, not West Jordan. South Jordan.
West Jordan, Utah.
Yes. Yeah. West Jordan is where all the high mucky mucks live. South Jordan is more like where the hunter, where we live. There are us rural folks just trying to make it on what we got.
And, yeah, and my parents live in South Jordan.
That's what I was going to say. Don't your parents live there?
Heck, see? She can't fool you living on the east side. We know.
I do live on the east side. You are still stuck in the west side.
West side.
Well, anyway, so we had had a couple cops from South Jordan PD that had a runaway bull. And
yeah,
the only way that they could corral this thing was to use their tasers. So tell me what you think about that, Sue.
There's a couple reasons for that, okay? At the moment, it is hunting season, okay? So all the men that either are out bow hunting or regular hunting, they're not around to help this poor guy with his bull, okay? The people that are around are down at the Utah State Fair with their prize bull, so this bull obviously didn't make it into the show, and he was pissed. And his buddies went down the road. So he went down the road, okay? Now, if they had been around...
I'm going to stick a taser on some bull's ass.
How many tasers does it take down a bull anyway? I mean...
Well, that's what I was kind of curious about, because that's all they said in the story.
Right there. They didn't need to do that. There's a cue for you right there.
Well, it ran over an 80-year-old man.
Oh, it just winged him. Oh, my gosh.
He ended up in the hospital, Suze.
Just with minor cuts and bruises.
He was in the hospital.
It's nothing his ex-wife wouldn't have done with a car. I mean, please.
Well, you know, for years now, ever since, for the last couple years.
Damn idiot trying to stick a damn taser up the bull's ass.
Well, for the last 2 years, we've been keeping track of does it tase or does it not? And they've hit dogs, they've hit cats, they've hit emus. And now we know that a bull will tase. All right.
Shell.
Shell, after your day off or week off.
Wait, Shell, listen.
Shut up.
Listen.
Where you shut up, Suze. We're going to have to mute you.
Wait.
All right.
Wait. What's that?
Susie. Hello, Susie. Shut up, Shell. Listen to me. All right. Now, you pick number 10, story number 10, and that's the one out of Seattle, Washington, where prosecutors say that a Kent Washington guy, coerced his girlfriend into having sex with him by threatening to post nude photos of her online if she didn't. And he got popped for extortion. So what do you think about that?
Hold up. What the hell did I just hear?
Susie. Hello, Susie.
What was that?
Nothing.
What is it?
What?
It was just a little hello.
Let me hear. Okay. What?
That's my new alarm clock.
Wait a minute. I hear George.
Oh, is that that?
Yes, you do.
What the hell is that?
You remember last week, George was on, or Michael, and Suze asked for one thing. She just wanted to hear Michael say her name over and over and over again, and he did.
You suck.
I do.
George sucks. This guy sounds so familiar. Oh, my God. I know I left an ass bite behind in Washington. He was always trying to blackmail me into having sex. He wasn't getting it the other way. Suze, didn't you have one just like that, too?
That was a while back, yeah.
I thought it was kind of enterprising.
Enterprising.
It must have worked, because she apparently had sex with him. So it was like the fourth or fifth time, I think, she kind
of
started.
Well, he must have ran out of money. Yeah. That was my ex-husband's problem. I was like... he ain't got nothing to offer anymore.
No, anyway. He wanted money from her. So either she ran out of money or he ran out of film. We can't figure out which one.
Well, I'll tell you, here's the thing that I thought was really interesting was the fact that the prosecutor asked for a $25,000 bail on this guy, but the judge released him on his own recognizance after his arrest. So I guess a little bit of extortion is not a big deal. And, you know, how else do you say I care other than extortion?
No, move to Washington. Extortion is easy there.
He's the first man that says, I'll give you this if you give me some sugar, baby.
All right, that's enough. Time to go.
Gotta be the altitude.
All right, say goodbye, Suze.
Goodbye, Suze.
I'm not talking to you, Suze. I hate you.
And Michael, you've created enemies. We'll talk at y'all next week.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Well, Shell and Suze are always a hoot. And remember, you can catch up with the two girls from Utah on Cops Online at copsonline.com. Just look for Hell's Bunny and Buckethead in the chat room. Well, I guess it's about time to move into the briefing room so that we can talk about those offbeat stories that our legion of listeners have come to love and can't hear anywhere else but right here on Copcast. Item number one. A good Samaritan was given a parking ticket after he pulled over to help a heart attack victim in Germany. First aider Stephen Schulzenwolf, I love those German names, 42, spotted the woman collapsed in the street and pulled up to give her help. He said he could see something really bad had happened, and he did what he could to help. He knew that the best thing he could do was just get her an ambulance, and the last thing he was thinking about was where and how long he could park his car. He waited with her for the ambulance to arrive, but when he got back to his car, he found a traffic warden writing a ticket. She could see what he had stopped for, and he tried to explain it, but it didn't seem to make any difference to her. He went on to say that he knew that traffic wardens have a reputation for being miserable and hard-hearted. Well, it looks like it's true in this particular case. Remember, people, discretion. That's the operative word. Just because you can do something doesn't mean that you have to do it every time. Item number two. A would-be thief in Vernon, British Columbia, took no for an answer 2 out of 3 times. In the end, his persistence paid off. It all started last Tuesday evening when the man entered a Vernon Square dollar store at about 5:45 p.m. He demanded money, but the cashier refused, and so the guy just left. Then he entered a Money Mart at about 7:20 p.m. This time he pulled out a knife and demanded money. Again, the teller just refused to hand over the cash, so he left. Makes you kind of wonder, you know, why did he bother with the knife? Finally, at about 9 p.m., he actually did succeed in robbing a gas station, and he fled with an undisclosed amount of money. I guess they finally took him seriously at the gas station. He's described as a skinny man in his 20s with light brown or blonde hair, about 5'6". I guess, you know, as the saying goes, if you fail, try and try again, because he sure did. Item number three. Authorities in Fresno, California, arrested a man they said tried to trade his father's car for $50 worth of crack cocaine. Deputies arrested the 39-year-old man after his 74-year-old father reported that his Lincoln had been stolen. When deputies arrived at the father's home, they saw the son walking up the street. They determined that the car had been sold for drugs. Deputies later saw someone else driving the Lincoln and pulled it over. The driver fled the moving car, which hit 2 parked cars. Deputies eventually ended up catching up with the driver, and he was arrested on suspicion of evading an officer and resisting arrest. The son was arrested on suspicion of car theft. Authorities did not release the names of those involved. Isn't that just special? You think the boy needs to go 12-stepping? Item number four. The moon has just begun to rise over the Wichita skyline. There's a certain magic in the early evening Kansas air. Two middle-aged lovers, overcome with passion, seek sanctuary in the first place they can find, a dumpster. It may have seemed like a good idea at the time, at least a good idea for Wichita, I don't know, but it turned out it ended up being a little embarrassing and almost very expensive decision for the two. The tender moment in the trash bin went all wrong when the couple found themselves being held at knife point
Wichita police say that the two 44-year-olds had climbed into the dumpster to be alone after right around 6 p.m. when two men interrupted them and demanded their belongings. Officers say that the man and the woman were engaged in, it's a quote, an intimate moment, when they were robbed of their shoes, jewelry, and the man's wallet. One of the robbers was a 64-year-old man who egged his 59-year-old companion on during the robbery. The suspects were found a short time later, and the stolen property was returned. The couple's dignity, however, has yet to be recovered. Dumpster sex. Sounds like Kentucky. Item number 5. A driver who Illinois authorities say was painting her fingernails when she struck and killed a motorcyclist was indicted and charged with reckless homicide. Laura L. Hunt, 48, of Morris, faces a 6-count indictment in connection with the May death of Anita Zafk. She faces up to 5 years in prison if convicted. Hunt was driving about 50 miles an hour, which is actually under the speed limit, when she hit Zafk's motorcycle. Hunt told the cops she was painting her nails while driving. Zafk, 56, was obeying that traffic signal and was stopped at an intersection when she was killed. Hunt initially was ticketed for failure to reduce speed to avoid an accident, but the charge was dropped to avoid any potential double jeopardy problems where she could be tried in a crime she had already been convicted or acquitted of. A bond was set for at $100,000. What a mess. This distracted driving thing has kind of gotten out of hand. Texting while driving, playing with radios, eating, drinking, all of it's a problem, I guess. Item 6. It appears a man was impersonating a police officer. That's not what's unique about this one. This guy was doing it in probably the worst possible place. Philadelphia police say that around 1 a.m. on Tuesday, an unfamiliar man entered the 18th Police District building through the back. Investigators say the man, Kelvin Adams, was wearing a gun belt and handcuffs on his waist as he went in. Officers say they found Adams in a woman's locker room and he was taken into custody. On top of the intrusion, police say they found Adams had parked his rental vehicle in the spot set aside for the 18th District commanding officer. A search warrant was obtained and they recovered a handheld radio, security badge, police incident reports, handcuff keys, and Philadelphia police uniform pants. Adams is charged with burglary, criminal trespass, theft, receiving stolen property, unlawful use of computer, criminal mischief, unauthorized use of an auto, and impersonating a police officer. I'm thinking Adams is probably going to go away for a little while. Item 7. How would you like to have to write the report on this one? A 33-year-old housewife who decided to go shopping while still wearing a pair of her Ann Summers vibrating passion pants collapsed and later woke up with a hospital around her after the integrated 2.5-inch vibrator made her faint. The lady, this is in Wells, banged her head on some shelves as she took a dive in her local Asda supermarket. Paramedics detected the still buzzing panties upon their arrival and disabled them, and later returned them to their rightful owner in a plastic bag. I bet I know what the buzz was in that market that day. Passion panties. Interesting. Item 8. War can be dangerous, even for a reenactor. Now a Virginia judge has dismissed a firearms charge against a Confederate reenactor who accidentally shot someone on the Union side. Joshua Silver paid $1,200 in restitution and took a firearm safety class. The accident occurred in southeastern Virginia last year. Silva shot and wounded a retired New York City police officer during the filming of a Civil War film documentary. The man recovered. Prosecutors say Silva didn't realize his replica gun was loaded with live ammunition. Reenactment organizers also failed to perform the required safety checks. 3 times, people. Have 3 different people check the weapons to make sure that they are not loaded. Item 9. I had to do this next story, Because it's funny. Guess what police found growing on High Street? You probably guessed it. It was pot. Officers in Millville, New Jersey, report that the odd-looking plants sprouting on High Street were indeed marijuana. They were in a basket hanging from a lamppost in Millville's business district. Authorities were tipped off by someone who noticed a strange-looking greenery. Officials have no idea how the illegal weed came to be growing on High Street. I could offer them some suggestions that I'm sure could probably come pretty close to being on target. Item 10. The popular online networking site Facebook helped lead to an alleged burglar's arrest after he stopped to check his account on the victim's computer, but forgot to log back out before leaving the home with two diamond rings. Jonathan G. Parker, 19, of Fort Loudoun, Pennsylvania, was arraigned on one count of felony daytime burglary. According to court records, Deputy P.D. Ware of the Berkeley County Sheriff's Department responded to the victim's home after she reported the burglary. She told police that someone had broken into her home through a bedroom window. There were open cabinets in her garage and other signs of a burglar. The victim later noticed that the intruder also used her computer to check his Facebook status, and his account was still open when she checked the computer. The victim later noticed that she was missing two diamond rings from her dresser in the same room as her computer. The two rings were worth more than $3,500. At least that's what's on the report. During the investigation, a friend of the victim told her that he knew where Parker was staying, which was in the same area as the victim's house. Police went to the home and spoke with a friend of Parker's. The man said that Parker had stopped by his home occasionally, but he actually didn't live there. He also said that on the night before the burglary, Parker asked him if he wanted to help break into the victim's home, but he refused. As of Tuesday evening, Parker remained in the custody of the Eastern Regional Jail on 10 grand bond. He faces 10 years in the big house. Well, that's about it for this week's stories. I want to thank Clinton, Drizilla Gothley, Sergeant B, and Sergeant TC, who were our Copcast correspondents this week, and they all contributed stories for this week's show. Next up, on to George's Pocketbook. This week we have another installment of the Tales from George's Pocketbook, our audio segment from our brother officers over in Great Britain. You know, it seems it's not just George that manages to get into a mess. This week, it's his friend that has to deal with a pussy with mange. I think it's best that I'll just leave it at that. So sit back and give it a listen.
Welcome to another tale from George's Pocketbook. George is a frontline UK response officer dedicated to fighting crime, resolving family disputes in minutes that have taken years to break down, and getting in the faces of the social underclass. All events are real, and names and places have been changed to protect the innocent, not so innocent, and plain stupid.
George and his old mate, Mark, were posted as the early turn van crew. And as even more of a rarity, George was posted as the operator and not the driver. The banter between the two was usually fairly predictable. Mark would be baiting George over his stocky build, and George in return usually found some way to mock Mark's bald and shaved head. The two friends had been working together on the same team for years, but didn't often get the chance to work together, and the superstitious among their teammates preferred things that way. You see, George and Mark had a reputation for being grief magnets. That is to say, when they worked together, then the shift was not going to go well, and somewhere along the way the wheel was going to come off. Fairly soon after parade, and that all-important first coffee of the shift, it seemed as if the worst might come true. The first call that the van was assigned to was a sudden death. Never the most pleasant of taskings to be given, it became evident immediately after their arrival that this was going to be even less pleasant than normal. The recently deceased turned out to be the local cat lady, and they had been called by her 44-year-old son, who had found her when he came to see her for his weekly visit. Every town has a cat lady, and this one followed all the stereotypes faithfully. Her house was overrun by around 25 cats, all of whom appeared to be shedding with abandon, and none of whom appeared to ever leave the house for any reason at all, especially to use the toilet. The house was filthy, there were unwashed dishes all over the kitchen, and the whole place reeked of stale cat urine. The cats themselves were undernourished, dishevelled and neurotic. There didn't seem to be a single healthy specimen among them, and they somehow managed to be everywhere all at once. They were sprawled over shelves and tables, seats and cushions, and particularly on every space on the floor where either George or Mark tried to set foot. While they made arrangements for the coroner and the undertaker to attend and deal with the body of the old lady, Mark made sure that the RSPCA, that's the main UK animal welfare organisation, was informed. Within the hour, a lady RSPCA inspector turned up to attend to the cats. She identified one that had the worst open wounds and decided that that one was her priority and removed it from Cat City. Mark almost ran out of the house with her, and then returned to the van where George was waiting and desperately gulping some fresh air into his lungs. "How many is she taking?" asked George. "Just one for now. She'll be sorting the rest out tomorrow. She's worried about that one. It's got open wounds and minge," said Mark.
"Minge?" queried George.
"Yeah, a skin disease that animals get," Mark confirmed.
"You mean mange, you fool," said George.
"Oh yeah," said Mark. "I wonder why she was looking at me a bit funny when I started going on about minge."
"You might get away with that, Mark," said George, "as long as you called them cats and not pussies."
Eventually, they both returned to the police station, scratching themselves vigorously. Whether it was because they had attracted fleas through their prolonged contact with the house filled with mange-ridden cats, or whether it was just the thought of the fleas, they didn't know. But Inspector Brigstock was on hand to give the pair advice on how to eradicate cat fleas. While he was doing so, Mark was scratching the top of his shining and smoothly shaved scalp. It was then that Mr. Brigstock pointed out that the fleas lived in hairy and furry places and not on bare hairless skin.
"But Gov," cried George, "Mark's ones are wearing ice skates. Look!"
Well, again this week, I want to thank Kevin and Michael for coming up with another great story. Remember, Michael has extended an open invitation to anyone who would like to write a story about their own real-life police experiences. You write it, he'll record it, and I'll play it. Good deal. Now, on to training announcements. This week, I want to let you know that on December 10th, an anti-terrorism training for first responders course will be conducted in Chesterfield, Virginia. This class consists of two sessions which will prepare emergency responders for bombing events. During the first session, students will become familiar with improvised explosive devices and explosive materials and train on critical response actions during pre- and post-detonation operations. The second session will provide training on suicide bombing threats. Students will become familiar with the types of devices used and techniques and tactics specific to suicide bombing. Both sessions will cover actions that emergency responders can take to prevent and/or deter bombing attacks against targets in their communities. Students must attend both sessions to receive credit. Online registration closes November 13th. For detailed course and registration information, visit the VDEM website, and I'll put the link in the show notes for you. Remember, we welcome training or event announcements from any criminal justice agency or training organization. All you have to do is send the information to talkback@copcast.net, and we'll be happy to announce your event on or your next training course. We're also pleased to be able to help criminal justice agencies find and hire the best qualified people. This week, I want to spotlight the Culpeper Police Department. They're seeking applications from people with serious interest in a law enforcement career. Benefits include the VRS, or Virginia Retirement System, health insurance, education incentives, vacation and sick leave. Of course, uniforms are furnished, along with a cleaning allowance. The starting salary for non-state certified people is $36,239. State certified folks will start out at $38,51. You can apply online at www.culpepperpd.com, and I'll stick that link in the show notes also. Remember, if your agency is hiring, just send us a little information about the job, and we'll announce it on our next show. Well, I think that's about it for this week. Another great show. But we want to thank you for taking your time to download and listen to Copcast, and be sure to let your friends and fellow officers know about the show. Also, remember that my Twitter name is Copcast, and you can follow me at twitter.com. You can also catch up with the two girls from Utah and Michael, a.k.a. George, on Cops Online at copsonline.com. If you haven't joined Cops Online yet, shoot on over there and join up. It's free. It's fun. It's a good resource. Shell is Hell's Bunny. Suze is Buckethead. And George is Michael, or Michael is George, or something like that. You can check them out in the chat room or send them an email. And please keep the comments coming. Remember, I can always use some more Copcast correspondence. You can send an email to talkback@copcast.net if you see something that happens that's cool from your area. Or better yet, if you have a computer and a microphone, send me an audio comment. I'll make you a star in the next show. But most importantly, stay safe out there and always wear your vest. So from the whole crew at Copcast, have a great week.